Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of the JT Fox Podcast Network. As you know, we interview some of the biggest Hollywood A-list celebrities, billionaires, multimillionaires, ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. But now we're going to start going more vertical. We have the very highly respected in New York City, very successful Zayed Abdennour from Lebanon, who has Black Hawk Partners, who I had heard of many years before. Him and I share both a gift, and it's the gift of no nonsense and no BS and call it exactly how it is. And he doesn't do too many interviews. And so this is a really exclusive because he is too busy doing the things, not talking about them. And that is why it's a huge honor to have him. I was actually very excited. It's been a very long time since I've been excited to have someone, especially as respected as successful. Zayed, welcome to the show. How are you?
Nice meeting you. Thank you for having me.
So I'm going to take a step back because normally I can Google, you know, the story of Richard Branson and then people knows, you know, or any big names as well. You are from Lebanon and you are in America living the American dream. I can relate to because I'm a Canadian who moved here over 12, 13 years ago, went from zero to nine figures, building an empire from scratch as well. Let me talk about your journey, right? And then we'll get to exactly what you do, because I think it's fascinating. The expression sometimes is that immigrants are sometimes more times likely to succeed in America than people that are born here because we have no choice. Once we're here, we can't afford to go back. It's like broke, or, you know what I mean? It's not like, all right, I'm down to my $1,000. Now I'm going to fly back. Right. And so, and now that's happened to me. So maybe go over your journey a little bit and that pursuit of the American dream, even though we have a global audience. But.
Well, let me tell you a bit about the Lebanese in general. The Lebanese have the largest diaspora in the world. We're talking about 20 million people of Lebanese descent outside Lebanon. There's 6 million in Brazil, 3 million in the US, and the rest all over the world, Africa, Europe, Asia, whatever. They're very successful people in general. They're very hardworking people because Lebanon doesn't have anything really to offer. So they had to leave the country for opportunities outside. We don't have oil. We don't have any natural resources. We rely on services. And a lot of them are in the service business and mostly in the financial services. You go on Wall Street, you go for the advisors of the royal families in the Gulf. They're all Lebanese. You go in Africa, all of the big empires, they're all Lebanese. So it's a trade that we have. I'm one of many. Maybe I have a higher profile than a lot of them, but this is a trait with most of the Lebanese. That's number one. The reason I came to this country is that Lebanon was under civil war. I'm a Lebanese Christian, so we are a minority there. My family comes from a long line political family in Lebanon, been in politics for 40, 50 years, maybe one of the few families that lasted in politics that long. The Lebanese Civil War started in 75. It was a disaster. The Christians were losing power vis-a-vis the others. Basically, the Iranians through Hezbollah were running the country. So I had to leave. The United States was the only place to come for opportunities, for fortune, for freedom, etc. I'm very much into freedom. And money for me really is about freedom. It's not about acquiring things and flaunting them. It's about freedom. The United States naturally at that point in time, that was in the mid 80s, was the natural place to come. I speak English. I wouldn't go to Brazil, although there's a lot of Lebanese, big Lebanese community in Brazil. So I came to the United States. At that time, you know, the sky was the limit. Reagan was in power. Capitalism was, you know, flowing. Wall Street. The Wall Street boom started in 82, you know, when the Dow was at 800. Think about it today, we got over 30,000. So it's been a huge ride. So I rode the wave, you know, coming to Lebanon, start my career, got my master's degree of the Wharton School of Business of Finance, then started my career on Wall Street for the fiercest working. That was my first and only job with the fiercest investment bank on Wall Street called Drexel Burnham under Mike Milken, you know.
The guy who went to jail.
You know, for those who don't know, you know, who basically invented and commercialized the junk bond market. the high yield bond market. Got involved. I was very lucky to be part of that group where I learned finance directly from Mike. He was my mentor. And this is where I really learned all the skills in finance, leverage buyouts, etc. The movie Wall Street was basically, you know, from, it's the story of Milken and what we did. Yeah, it was the period of excesses. I agree. Greed is good, all that kind of stuff. But this is how you learn about capitalism. So I was very lucky. And I worked hard to be part of that group who revolutionized finance, you know, and the landscape. And so that's how I started my career. Then after the government puts Drexel out of business, I started my own company, became an entrepreneur. I said, I'm not going to work for anyone anymore, for the simple reason that if the government can put Drexel Burnham out of business, the most capitalistic firm ever, they can put anyone out of business. So I started to take, I decided to take control of my destiny, not being in control. You see that?
And by the way, by the time you're doing that, how much money are you making at Drexel? Coming from Lebanon, no money. I mean, you came to America with how much money?
Drexel was very unusual, you know, not like any other firm. Just to give you a proportion of the money made, it was obscene. Mike Milken himself was making $800 million a year. And this is
back then, yeah.
Yes, this is in 80s dollars. This is 40 years ago. This is in 80s dollars. The money we all made in the high bond department was pretty obnoxious. I'm not going to mention numbers, but it's very obnoxious.
What did you do with that money? Were you like reinvesting in deals, stuff like that?
Yeah. This was basically the firepower that made me decide to become an entrepreneur after that. I mean, if I didn't make this kind of money, I wouldn't have become an entrepreneur. I would have maybe joined another firm, you know. And I got offers to, you know, with $3 million upfront to really join. I mean, this is in the 80s.
And this is the 80s, right? That'd be equivalent of like $10 to $15 million dollars today.
Yeah, but then I said, basically, that's not...
Was your gift? Let's go talk about why would people offer you that? What was your special talent that people really wanted to? Obviously, people get paid proportionate to the value and talent. Was it because of what you did over there? Did you have a special skill? What was your superpower back then?
That's a very good question, and I'm glad you asked. Well, number one is really my understanding of finance. And I learned this from Mike. We know exactly... You see... If you want to do deals, the first thing you have to do is educate people. A lot of people don't know much about finance. They have big egos. They think they know it all. They don't know much. So you have to educate them, because once you have an educated client, whether a borrower or an investor, it's much easier to do deals and to transact. And that's missing a lot. Then at the end of the day, it's all about sales. You have to know how to sell. But you cannot sell without knowing your stuff inside out to come up with arguments to prevail. If not, you're like a used car salesman. You know, you're selling hot air. It's bullshit. A lot of bullshit out there. People send you all the pizzazz, all the hype, all the stuff. It doesn't work. You really have to have a lot of substance. And to have a lot of substance, you have to interact with very smart people who are knowledgeable, and you have to read a lot, you know, all kinds of things. And this is what people are missing. Today is the age of instant gratification. Nobody wants to read, nobody wants to deal, and they're always right. Sometimes it's good to be wrong, because this is how you learn. If not, you're not growing. So to make a long story short, and to answer this question very thing, is education and salesmanship, and knowing exactly how to vet people. Because at the end of the day, it's all about people. You know, it's not, for example, people come in, look, I have a great technology, I have this business. I don't care. They tell me which kind of, what kind of deals do you back? I don't think about industry, technology, etc. I think about people. Who are these people? Yeah. It's all about execution. Who are these people? What's their track record? At the end of the day, there are three, criteria, you know, I follow when I back a deal. Number one, they have to be operators, not advisors, economists, bankers, lawyers, operators. If you haven't operated, operators with a track record, You know, and you know what? Even if you fail, that's okay. Frankly, I prefer to back somebody who went into bankruptcy 3 times rather than a prima donna, worked for IBM all these years, who went to Harvard Business School, and who thinks he's entitled to be back because of his background. Why? Because the one who went bankrupt 3 times is basically very hungry. He's very humble. He has been humble. He's going to work his ass off to prove himself that he can succeed. So it's all about people. What do you have in your guts? You know, how much can you, have you bounced back? What's your track record? Number one, operators. Number two, skin in the game. A lot of people who don't have skin in the game in their company are full of shit. Oh, I don't have money, sweat equity. I spent 3 years of my life trying to build this. No, no, that doesn't mean nothing. Spend 3 years of your life. This is what entrepreneurship is all about. So you have to have skin in the game. And usually when we back a deal, we require people to have 10% equity, skin in the game, cash of the money he's seeking. So you're seeking $100 million? Show me $10 million on that, whether it's coming from you or from your family office, partners, investors, lender, etc. And we will finance 90% of the deal. Who finances 90%? No bank will finance 90%. But you have to show me skin in the game. You have to show me your track record. And number three, execution. How are you going to execute? People show you the what, the why, the when, the where. I don't care. You know, what matters is how. Business is war. You are General Schwarzkopf. You're going to war. How are you going to deploy your ammunition? How are you going to execute? Not, oh, I'm going to rely on advertising. Things will come, you know. It's bullshit. All bullshit. Operating track record, skin in the game, and execution. Now, it doesn't matter what industry, it doesn't matter anything like that, because these are the three, in my 30 years experience, this is really what matters. All the rest is for the birds, is bullshit. You know what? At the end of the day, you can back an A team and a B product, or an A product and a B team. If it's an A product and a B team, okay, if things go wrong, you know, you cannot turn it around. With an A team, no matter what the industry, they're going to turn it around. They're going to execute. They have skin in the game. They have a lot of risk. They have a background. They have a track record. They failed. They succeeded, etc. This is the essence of a deal. This is the essence of creating real wealth, you know, on that. So we use leverage finance. We leverage the deal. We make sure that the operator has a track record, skin in the game, and knows how to execute. This is really what matters. All the rest is bullshit. And I've written a book about it, by the way. You can find it on Amazon. It's called The Startup Saboteurs, How Ego, Incompetence, and Small Thinking Prevent Wealth Creation. That's exactly it. Wow. Because 90% of the deal fail because of ego. Because the entrepreneur thinks he's so damn smart and he knows it all. Small thinking. Ego, incompetence, or small thinking. This is what matters. This is why deeds fail. So, for example, on track record, like this guy worked for Starwood, you know, for 20 years. You know, Starwood, the big real estate developer.
Yeah, the real estate. Barry Sternlicht.
Exactly. So he came in here, he decided to start his own gig. He had a lot of experience. He had a few dollars. And he said, I want to develop this. Sort of, no, because you were never a developer. You were never an operator. You're an advisor to a developer. You may know the stuff, but you haven't been a developer. I'm only dealing with developers. And the problem with developers is that they're very asset rich, but they're not cash rich. So it's not, you have to find the right thing from the beginning. If not, you're wasting your time. You're wasting their time chasing rainbows. What the hell are you doing? You know, so. This is what I like to focus on. I never focus on raising money, like all these guys. We have enough money. We can deploy enough money. There's a lot of money out there. But really on finding the right teams, the right combination, the right source to execute with a track record, with skin in the game. This is what matters. This stuff is not taught in business schools.
No.
Stuff is not taught anywhere. This is from experience I'm talking. Yeah.
I've learned what people just listen here. I would recommend you listen 3 times because what you have got, and I've done over 1,000 interviews. I speak all over the world. I mean, I have a lot of businesses myself. It was probably the most real truth that people I've ever heard. And I think it's probably the longest I haven't said a word. And I'll add another one to you, and you think you'll appreciate this. Everyone who pitches deals to me and you, it's always the best case scenario, yeah. Right? Oh, there's a $1 trillion market, and if we only have 5%, we're going to, everything is going to, like, you know, and it's funny. I look at what's the worst case, right? No one thinks of the worst case because they just think, hey, I'm going to have an app. It's going to be the next Uber, or I start a business I want to make tomorrow, right? They never take a look at the worst
case. This is the thing. They're pitching the product, not themselves. I am very controversial. I don't mind somebody walking down the door in my office telling me I am God. I tell him, you know what? Okay, if you can back it up, I'm with you. Back it up. Prove it. If you walk in a Silicon Valley VC and tell them I'm God, they'll kick you out the door. Who the hell do you think you are? I don't mind saying, you can say whatever you want if you can back it up.
Back it up.
You can show me the track record, if you can show me this. And frankly, this is the kind of guys I want to deal with. I want to deal with killer sharks who can really execute flawlessly and who are sure of themselves. And it's not a question of ego. There's a fine line between confidence and ego. You know, fine line. So this is confidence. Who are assertive, confident, track record, skin in the game, execution capabilities, no bullshit. I mean, I had a lot of good experience with the military guys. Military guys, they get it. They get it. Especially the guys.
You know what? And they don't lie. They don't lie. In my experience doing with them, there's a code. There's a code. They don't lie. And you know what? And you know what? They're like, tell me what to do. And they're okay asking for advice because they've been trained. The problem with them is once they leave military school, they've been told everything to do, then they're not sure what to do. That's the downside of military guys.
Exactly. So you see, it requires a lot of discipline, savvy, education also. A lot of people are not educated. They really don't know. They take it because they spend their time on social media. You don't learn much on social media.
It's 45-second clips of what it takes to succeed from people who pretend to be successful.
You know, and they're, with all due respect, they're impressed by all these guys like a Tony Robbins or this and that. This is all what they're saying is bullshit. I saw him doing his thing. He's jumping, they're jumping. They are mid-class people attending this shit and jumping like him. Feel good. It's a feel good. I'm not here to make you feel good. I'm here to nurture you, to turn you into a killer shark making fuck you money. Okay, I'm not here to make you feel good.
By the way, I think you may be my dad. Like, my dad passed away. I think you may be, somehow, there may be a generational line that I must have come in, because it's exactly what to say, because most people want to hear what they want to hear. So someone will come in and will give you and I a business idea, and you say, it's shit, that's never going to make money. Now, rather than, and then you say, here's why. And rather than them saying, what do I need to do to change or maybe move on to something else? Yeah. They will go to someone else and say, it's a great idea. Or everyone tells them it's a great idea. But you know what they never said? Here, do you want to buy? Well, no, I don't want to buy. It's a great idea, but they're not buying. Or it's a great name. They don't know anything about business. And I think everyone wants to be told the truth as long as you agree with their truth, right?
Exactly. And that's the problem. This is why most of the people don't get funded. Most of the people wonder why they're not getting funded, why they're not getting the proper attention, the proper reception. And that's what it is. It's nothing to do with branding. All this branding, you know what? I have 100,000 followers, 100 million followers. Doesn't matter. It's not the followers. It's how you engage people. You don't need all these followers, all this thing.
No, those are fans, Ziad. And by the way, a lot of them buy them. If you look at some of the people, because I say to you, like, people will say, because I have, 150,000 followers, right? Which is not that big compared to the millions. But I could go on a software and see, and these people buy. So then they have to buy the comments. They have to buy the likes, right? Because it's all a charade to look people are important. Quality rather than quantity. And I know a lot of billionaires that have less than 1,000. Right? It's
exactly right. I was going to say that. You stole the words from my mouth. Frankly, let me get rid of this. Hold on a second.
No problem.
Frankly, you know, you don't need than a small pottery of people to make a lot of money. 1,500 people. That's it. But 1,500 people like you, because at the end of the day, you become the average of the people closest to you. So if you can find 50 to 100 people just like you or close to you, you don't need anybody else. This is it. At the end of the day, for all these guys who have followers, it's not the followers, it's the engagement. Like all these guys on LinkedIn, they have like 30,000, 40,000 followers, and you see that they have very little engagement.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about your followers, how you need to engage. When I write a blog on LinkedIn, et cetera, I get 200,000 impressions, you know, with a sum of thumb. I mean, with tens of hundreds of followers and comments and likes, et cetera. This is what matters. This is how I judge. When I look at somebody, I look at his engagement. When he says something, what? How do people react? How many comments? How many likes? Is he getting attention? It's not how many followers, because as you said, the followers can be both, but the engagement, it cannot be both.
It's so let me ask you, the killer shark, right? So that is how people have described me in the past. And it's interesting because I was coached by, I don't know if you know George Ross, he was Trump's right-hand man. You know, he's not political. He's 95 years old. He's still my advisor. And it's been for 12 years, right? When he left to Trump, he came to work for me. And he is the guy that's always been no BS. And he said, JT, if you lie to people, even if you have to lose the deal, lose the opportunity, then, you know, that's okay. You keep your integrity. But being a straightforward, no BS people, and very so much like you, you start developing, people that there's a jealousy, there's a hatred, right?
Yeah.
And you may lose deals because you don't know what people are saying behind the room. Oh, that guy is this, or he's this. And it's not true because they're intimidated by you or they don't like the bluntness. How do you, did you ever think about, you know, am I crossing the line? Is my no BS going to make me lose money or do business? Or this is who I am. This is my individuality. And yeah, I may lose, but in the end I'll win.
Great question. JT, that's a great question. Okay, look, at the end of the day, this is who I am. This is my DNA. You know, I'm not running for office. I'm not going into politics. I don't care if they like what I say or not. This is the truth. I make money. I conduct my life based on this. This is who I am. You accept it or not. There's 7 billion people in the world. You cannot be liked and admired by 7 billion people. Whatever you do, whatever you say, there are going to be people who are going to criticize you, who are going to gossip, who are going to say bad things because they're jealous, they're for a zillion reasons. I'm not going to go over all the reasons.
Right.
I don't care. It's not the thing. I only need people who basically get it. You get it. And you know what? It doesn't take me much to vet people. I can vet them very quickly. My partners tell me, my God, when you vet people, it's like you're on steroids.
Can you give us an example of how you vet people?
Well, give you an example, okay, from the people I hire, okay? This is a very simple example. So when I hire people, everybody looks good on paper, okay? Our resume is good, it's fancy, you know. I went to Harvard, I worked for Goldman, okay. But no, this doesn't tell me who he or she really is. What's in your gut? How ballsy you are, how smart you are. So I ask one question before forwarding the people to the HR or my other partners, etc. One question, which will determine who they are and how they are. I'll tell you what the question is. It may sound like a stupid question, but it's not. It's done on purpose to really get to know that person I'm interviewing very quickly. So the question is, what pisses you off? 95% of the people will answer me, oh, this and this and this, you know? And this is bullshit. They answer me because they're intimidated, because they want the job, because they're.
So what are they telling you that's bullshit?
Huh?
Hold on. What are they telling you that's bullshit?
There are very few people who tell me, what kind of fucking question is that? This is the kind of people I really am interested in. Because this guy has balls. Because this guy he's challenging me. He's challenging his boss. I'll tell you, three words I use really, very people, okay? I call it BBH, balls, brains, and heart. I'll explain. If you have balls only, no brains and no heart, you will self-implode. You're hot-headed. You're gonna go. If you have brains only, you're a bureaucrat. Tons of brainy people who can't do shit. They're bureaucrat. If you have no heart, no compassion, you're not a human, you're a piece of shit. But you have to have the three. I want people with guts, brainy, who guts to do things, to take things done, to execute, brainy, and with compassion. So, I mean, this is, I like the people who challenge things, who have critical thinking, who think outside the norm, who think outside the curve, who really are ballsy. Because if I'm not, and this is why I call him a black hawker, because if I'm not at the office, he can challenge the biggest CEO or CFO who comes in, who's a billionaire, who's going to ask him, even a junior guy. I don't want peons. I don't want yes man. I don't want abiding people. I don't want people who follow the norm, who are normal. Normal is boring. I want killers, mavericks, rebels, controversial, super smart, very educated. It's tough to find. But this is how I find them very quickly. It doesn't take me more than 5 minutes to find somebody like this and to see how he reacts and to see that he's not, you know, I go, for example, I throw an attack on Goldman Sachs or on Harvard Business School. You know, if he feels offended, he's a fucking moron. If he reacts like this in a different way, I understand. Because all this shit at the end of the day, all these brands, all these names doesn't mean shit. Like a guy comes and tells me, you know what? I'm going to show you a deal where Warren Buffett and Bill Gates invested in this deal. Would you want to tag along? I told him, how much did they invest each? Very simple. He told me, this guy invested 100 million, this guy invested 275 million. I told him, and you want me to invest what? To bail them out? I mean, no, to be with them. I told him, you're calling me to invest to bail them out. They lost their shirt on this deal. He said, oh. So they pitch it in the terms of brand. Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, you know, I don't give a fuck about what Warren Buffett invested or Bill Gates invested. They're not gods, you know. They make errors too. I'm not here to bail them out. Most of the people will jump, oh, because it's the Oracle of Omaha, oh, because it's Bill Gates. It's all the brand shit, not impress me, doesn't impress me. You have to go beyond this. You have to really look at the deal itself. You have to be a very much of a contrarian. You know, everybody today follows the crowd, follows the names, follows this. You can't do that. The guys who make real money buck the trends. Look at Milken, buck the trends. No investment grade. We're going to make a revolution in finance. I want it to be a revolutionary in the way you invest, in the way you think, in the way you analyze, in the way you criticize. No more critical thinkers out there.
But Ty, what about this generation, right? This generation. Exactly. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal that said, like the weak, and nobody wants to work. No, everybody's offended by what people say. The truth is, yeah. I remember I started off, I had a beeper. I remember because I couldn't afford a cell phone. So I had a beeper, right? And I was working 7 days a week, 25 hours a day, nonstop, 1,000 offers on deals a week, 1,000, right? And I was getting 9.99% no's all the time and people yelling at me on the phone and like next call. And now I don't see that. Like you talk about that killer instinct. I haven't seen it in so long. I see it in you, you know what I mean? I see it in people that are older, that have wisdom, that have done it. But people, I said, they'd rather learn from people that are jumping around or people that have sound bites and showing their cars. You talk about flash. I have all the things that everybody has, except I've never shown it. You know why? Because people like you don't show it. And when you have people like you that have a lot more money than me and a lot more successful people, or even Jeff Bezos, he has a yacht, but he doesn't post it. Other people take pictures of it as well. And I find that when people post cars and jets is so that they could sell something to someone.
Yes. Let me elaborate a bit on that. Right on the money, JT. I'm really enjoying the conversation.
Me too. It's like, if that wasn't recorded, I'd still enjoy it. So
we think so much alike. Look, my father used to tell me, power does not roar. The true power does not roar. It's hidden. All these guys show these things because they're very insecure. Because they think they can attract attention because of their car and their jet, etc. They have no substance. There's nothing in there. The new generation is very much like this. It's a disaster. I was reading somewhere. They were comparing the different generation from baby boomers to Gen Z. Okay? The baby boomers, 2 or 3%, very small minority, adopt or understand socialism. You go to the next one, to the millennial, around 10 or 12%. You go to the next generation, around 15%. If you go to Gen Z, 25 to 30%. They don't want to work. They don't want to do maximum effort. They want the government handout. there's no more incentive. And now they're killing all the incentives to make money, to freedom, etc. But then also, the capitalists have a lot to blame. A few years back, you used to hear intellectual capitalists talk, educating people. Remember? Education. Like Milton Friedman, Red Hyde. They used to talk about all this stuff on TV. Today, tell me one Wall Street capitalist or one guy on TV who's educating people about capitalism. This is why I formed the Financial Council, Financial Policy Council, nonprofit, 501c3, financialpolicycouncil.org. You can check out the website, about educating people about capitalism, wealth creation, opportunities, etc. It's all in the education. There's no more education. They're hijacked from high school to college, teaching them about socialism. There's no balance. Nobody is countering this. No balance, no education. The Wall Street guys don't care. All they care is about making money. Well, it's not about making money. I'll tell you what, if you ask me, what is success really? Success is not about money and power and all this shit. Success is about empowering people. The more you empower people, the more you inspire them, the more successful they're going to be and you're going to be. The more you're going to create a movement. This shit is not taught today. Success is about empowering people. Everybody thinking about himself. The me, 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 me. Look at me. Look at how beautiful I am. Look at how smart I am. Look at how rich I am. Look at how things I am. It's supposed to be exactly the reverse. How do you empower people, masses of people, educate them, empower them, inspire them, trigger that in them? This is what needed. And today, this is not done at all. And this is why we're witnessing all this wave of stupidity, of laziness, of war culture, of cancel culture.
Entitlement.
Exactly. Entitlement, all the shit. This is exactly why.
How much of that is driven to your sort of immigrant background of coming where obviously Lebanon is extreme poverty and not there, to coming to America and going out there and fighting? And I know, I mean, Canada is nothing like Lebanon, but a different mentality, as you know, right? It was just, you know, don't talk about
you. I'll tell you, it's basically, I'll be very honest with you, as I always have been. You know, I coming from a well-to-do family, and I was given everything. I went to the best private schools in Europe, etc. So when I came to the United States, I said, I'm not going to, you know, I had already a different mentality. I wanted to keep that status quo. I wanted to increase it. I don't want to go back. When I came to New York City, the first 2 years were hell. I had to take the fucking subway every day. What is this disgusting subway? I said, I'm not going to take this shit. I'm going to work really hard to get out of it. Because once you see the side of you where you can really make this kind of money, and you come to the States with, of course, much bigger opportunity, said, I want to keep this. And this is a pretty prevailing with a lot of the immigrants, not just Lebanese, but also if you look at the Cubans, very hardworking people. If you look at other people, you know, their family.
Israelis also.
Yeah, yeah. Working. Cubans, Israelis, Lebanese, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're all the same. And so, you know.
But are you born with that killer shark? I mean, we talk about killer shark. I wasn't like that. You know, I think.
No, you're not born with it. No, you're not. I mean, I'll tell you, everybody's born with it, but everybody has the seeds. But sometimes you develop the seeds based on the society you work in, or you don't develop. But everybody has this anger. If you get angry, it's how you channel your energy. You channel your energy toward revolution, toward stupidity, toward self-destruction. You channel your energy towards wealth creation, education, discipline, etc. Everybody has a specific energy. How do you channel this energy? And the guys who channel their energy properly all become the killer sharks. It's how you develop this. This is what it is. So it's more, it's within each one of us, but not every one of us goes and triggers this. It's how you trigger it. And usually it's outside circumstances, influences, people who make you trigger this energy or not. I was very lucky to get to go and graduate from the Wharton School, super smart people, and to go and work for Milken, super smart, revolutionary in finance. He's the biggest rebel in finance. They're the two biggest financiers in the 20th century, where J.P. Morgan at the beginning of the century and Mike Milken at the end of the century. I happen to be work for him. So, and he triggered that. If I worked for another guy or another group, I wouldn't be today maybe where I am today, because I wouldn't have been inspired by such individuals. One man can make a difference. One man can create a revolution. Now, if you apply it properly, which is finance, which is the biggest of all, because finance cements everything. Everything you want to do requires money. If you know how to raise money, access money, invest money, trade money, all that kind of stuff, you can do a lot of things.
Where would people learn that? Where do you recommend people? Let's say the average entrepreneur all over the world is listening to you right now, and they just got hit with a ton of bricks, right? With the probably the truth that they have not expected, and boom. What do they do now? What's their next step? I know everyone's going to pick up your book, and I will myself too, right after this. I didn't even know you had a book. So I was like, that I actually ordered it while we were sitting here. So yeah. Multitasking. Like, I'm fast, right? I come up with an idea. I don't wait till later.
JT, you're my kind of guy, man. So number one, okay, they have to review all their Rolodex. A lot of the people in your Rolodex are a waste of time, are negative, are not doing anything. You have to review all that. You have to clean up the thing. That's very true. Because in the end of the day, you can lose all this money you made, all this windfall by dealing with the wrong people. The wrong deal, the wrong people, the wrong influence, the wrong everything. Number three, they're really going to have to start before committing any dollar. They have to start reading a lot, educating themselves a lot in something you really like. At the end of the day, it's not the money. It's you have to be the best in one thing.
The money is a byproduct of how good at what you do. Like an athlete, you're good at what you do, you're going to get paid a lot. You're good at your job, you get paid a lot. You're good at an entrepreneur. Yeah. So if you're not making a lot of money, you're not that good. People are like, I'm very good at what I do. Well, how many clients do you have? 10? You're not that good. You have 10 clients. You know what I mean? You've been doing this for 2 years.
Very true. Very true. You have to surround yourself with the right people. You have to be passionate about something you really are very good at. Just one thing. You don't have to be good at a zillion things. Just one thing. You have to be the absolute best. No competition is that. And then you're going to start applying this money to this focus with the right people that you're going to have. So the question of people investing in real estate, some people invest in this and that, they don't know what the fuck they're investing in. Just because it's hot. Just because some guru has told them that they should invest in real estate or they should invest in Bitcoin. They know nothing about Bitcoin. They know nothing about real estate. They go there without education, without any support. You know, when I invest in something, I have, through the Financial Policy Council, you have to check it out, financialpolicycouncil.org. I have an inner circle of experts in the field, experts in private equity, real estate, cannabis, Bitcoin, oil and gas, renewable energy, all this kind of stuff. I call them silos. These are experts in that. So when I go into that, you know, before the stock market went down, I went to the expert and stocks told me, go and short the market. Same with Bitcoin, go and long this and that. So I rely on experts. There are some experts. You know, number one, I read a lot, I educate myself a lot. I take risks, no guts, no glory. It's a combination of things, JT. It's not like one thing.
It's not one thing. It's about commitment and consistency.
I am actually running, producing a course soon that will explain and that will address everything like I'm doing with you, you know, with a lot of people who want to learn about this. You know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
So why give back, right? So maybe before we put in there, maybe tell us about Blackhawk Partners, which is your partner. So what does it do? What type of deals you do? And then transition to, okay, now where is this yours of this mission to educate the people now and let them know about something that it seems to be harder now to let people know because we live in a social media world, instant gratification, as you talked about. So what does Blackhawk do? And then transition, what's this new mission of yours?
Okay, Blackhawk is a private family office. What we do three things. We trade money, we invest in companies, and we fund companies and projects. So debt financing, equity financing, and trading, which is pretty much everything. So when people ask me, what business you're really in? I told them, I'm not in one business. I'm in the wealth creation business. How the fuck do you create money, make money out of thin air? Whether buying, selling, trading, investing, divesting, spinning out, turning around, restructuring, whatever it is. In every single asset class like this, there's an opportunity to make money. And in order to do that, you have to have the right people around you, which I chose over the years, to really go into a sector and make a killing. That's what we do. So it can be, we don't do startups, because most of the entrepreneurs who start up, they can't afford anything. They don't have a track record. They don't have all the three requirements I mentioned to you before. So we invest, we finance very large scale projects. Our minimum financing investment is $100 million and up. There's no limit on the upside. So these are companies that are cash flowing only, and they need the firepower to scale very aggressively. This is what we provide them. Equity financing, debt financing. On the trading side, we trade all kinds of financial instruments. Medium-term notes, corporate bonds, we monetize gold, we monetize diamonds. Everything in the process of wealth creation, we're here to move money. Look, at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you something I rarely said to people. It takes really two things to be on top of the world that you have to be able to do. This is what's most important. Not your know-how in technology and AI, et cetera. No, you have to be able to do things very, very well. Number one, move money. Number two, move people. It's all about people and money. If you can move the right people around you and the right money around you, you're unstoppable. All the rest of the people in the world work for people who can move money and people. That's it. They're all number conscious. They're all technologists, scientists, experts, but they report to the people who can move money and people. This is what matters. It took me a long time to realize this, but this is where it matters. You have a project. If you can't move the right people to execute and the money, the right money to fund, you have nothing. You can have the best technology in the world. So people are focusing on the wrong things. We really want to make money. They're focusing on the wrong things. They have the wrong people around them, and they don't have enough money to capitalize these deals that they love so much and that they're so much enamored with. You have to be able to move money and people. This is the essence. The people who run the world move money and people. I mean, whether from BlackRock or Vanguard, look at this. They have trillions of dollars and they have the right people. For talk to any financier, to anybody like that, whether in the history of things, from JP Morgan, he had money to move the people. If you can move an unlimited amount of money with the best, smartest, killer shark people like you, who have the same DNA as you, you're unstoppable. Everybody else works for you. Everybody else wants to please you. So this is really the essence, which a lot of people don't know. You've never read anything like that out there, but this is what it is. This is how people rule in finance. You know, Rothschild used to say, I don't care who rules. What I really care about is the people who have the money and the right people. That's what it is. So stick to people, not only they have money, but it depends what kind of money. There's smart money and there's stupid money. The stupid money for spending, the consumer kind money spent on cars and blank account, this is not the smart money. The smart money is people who can move towards real opportunities with you, alongside you, because they trust you, because they know what you're talking about, and they do that. We can move lots of money. I mean, I remember this vividly, to give you this example, JT. We were one day on a plane, the whole Drexel Burnham crew, going to Japan. And Mike Milken was on the plane with us. And somebody told him, look, we have to raise a mezzanine fund in Europe. Like $1 billion. This is in the 80s we're talking about, you know, where there was no such thing. He says, you see this plane? I can go from here till the end of, he was first class, of course, from here to the end of the plane and back, and I would have raised $1 billion. That's what I'm talking about, moving money. If you can move this kind of money that fast, and you have the right people around you, because you're going to do it on your own, who can execute on that, you're unstoppable. You're not unstoppable. You're dangerous. And this is what most people don't realize. They think, oh, I have a great technology, I have a great company. This doesn't do shit. So what? Who's your team? Who's going to fund it? What, it's a startup? You can't come up with $2 million? You don't have the right team?
Ideas are nothing. Yeah. Implementation is everything.
Everything. Implementation and money. Both. They go hand in hand. Yeah, sales, of course.
Because here's the thing too. If you have a great product you can't sell, then it doesn't matter. If you don't know marketing, no one will know about it. So that it's all like the foundations of a house.
Exactly right. So this is what BlackRock in summary does. You know, we basically invest, trade, finance, everything, and we always look for the right people, as I mentioned to you before, the criteria to be able to do that, no matter what.
So how did they go into now to the helping this new vision of?
Oh, I'm coming. You told me that's BlackRock. That's the first
yeah. That's fascinating.
I'm coming. So this is why I started in 2010 the Financial Policy Council, 501c3. This is a platform that's here to empower people, to educate people, to inspire people. We have the Financial Policy Council have 72 sponsors. The reason I did that, because I wanted to be fiercely independent. I don't want to be relying or bankrolled by neither the left nor the right. You know, this is not like a pack coming in. This way it is. We're fiercely independent. Check out the details, the blogs, the videos, the galleries, the
things. I'm right here. I'm going to do it right here in front of everybody. Just to give an idea, this is the website right there.
Yeah. Only there.
So it's out there. We'll give that out in the thing, and I'll read it afterwards.
Yeah, whenever you chance, you read it, etc. So it's been very successful. Over the last 12 years, we've been doing that. And this is the platform whereby we educate, empower people. We do a lot of events. We invite them on. We write a lot of blogs, proprietary podcasts, interviews, videos. I have a podcast called Money Talks, which we discuss what we're discussing now, you and I. And I bring in an individual to really talk about this. And I grill them with their questions about money, business, opportunities. So it's like a think tank. It's like, you know, we think about all these things before executing. You need a platform where you can, like a lab. You know, you come there to the lab, you think about this, you talk about this, you bring in the right people. And this is where also it's a recruiting ground, you know, for the best and the smartest to fund them, to fund their operations, and to grow the network. And
what does a family of disruptors mean? I was browsing through the website very quickly, and a lot of things says family of disruptors. What does that mean to you? Family of disruptors.
Disruptors, people who fit the criteria I mentioned to you about. You know, this is what it is. You're a disruptor. You know, by asking me this question, by making people think, by doing this, makes you disruptive. You are. You're not a normal guy, you know, and it doesn't take long to realize if somebody is a disruptive normal guy. I mean, I have some podcasts with people, they're very boring, you know, they ask very, you know what I mean, very simple, stupid questions to fit the norm. I'm not interested. And you're a disruptor. The more disruptors we have, who think like that and who can execute at the same time and make our ideas happen, the better it is, the better the world is. Everybody benefits from that. And this is what I'm trying to do here. I'm here to promote capitalism, patriotism, freedom, wealth creation, all that kind of stuff.
I look at the website, right? And the name, Financial Policy Council, sounds very corporate, United Nations type of thing.
I agree.
But I'm just, as you know, right? If you go to anybody, it just sounds like some Congress subgroup as well for the average entrepreneur listening. What was your thought process behind the name? Because
the name was created 12 years ago, JT. This is 2010. This is after the crisis.
Right.
After the AIDS crisis. And frankly, then I didn't have the ideas I have today. I wanted the council to be a forum. You know, when I realized in 2008 that all the politicians, all of Wall Street, they didn't have any solutions. There were the crisis, they were bitching about this and that. There was no solution. So I wanted to create a forum a nonprofit to discuss solutions, to provide solutions. So that's why I created the name the Council, to really do that. And a lot of our event, a lot of the speakers who came in are here to provide solutions. A lot of the blogs, it's all about solution. So this is how the name came in. I mean, and it stuck.
No, I mean, it's fascinating. By the way, so obviously I'm going to put the link for the website so people can listen to it, and to also Zayed's book as well. You and I will talk for a few minutes afterwards. But if you are smart and you want to succeed, you will listen to this interview 3 times. And you're going to go back and re-listen it the first time to actually listen to it, because you probably listened to this while you were in the car or doing something. So you didn't fully listen to every single word, because I listened to every word. And I took notes while he was speaking on top of that, because there were some very good things. Number two, you're going to re-listen and you're going to write some notes. Right. And the third time you're going to re-listen again, and you're going to say, I need to do this in my life. I need to do this in my life. Because this has to be, because most people's brains are leaky buckets. They're put into the brain, and you just listen to this interview and saying, wow, that was great, doesn't do anything. Unfortunately, it doesn't do anything if you don't implement and you don't say, how do I become a killer shark?
Exactly.
And what is it that I need to do? And it's not, because the foundation of what he talked about, which I'm pretty much sure the book is another very description of a lot of things we talked about as well. Because if you don't change and you don't change your mentality and you don't find that fire that's within, because that's what a killer shark is, it's a fire. It's never going to work. And all this will be is another great podcast, which is not going to make any difference unless you go out there and implement and, you know, fight for every inch, because that's what success is all about. So Zayed, final word.
I'd like to add a couple of things, JP. I appreciate you saying this. And look, at the end of the day, I'm not here to sell you anything.
No,
it's honest to God. A lot of the people that go there, they make all their money selling stuff, books, courses, you know, things like that. I don't make money. I make money doing this. So I'm not here to sell you anything. Another book, however, I recommend you to, I've written long time ago, and if you read it, I've written it in 2012, and I predicted all what was going to happen today. This was a long time ago. And people tell me, how did you know?
I didn't Economic know. Warfare, Secrets of Wealth Creation of Wealth of Politics.
Yes.
By the way, I will buy it right in front of you.
It applies today, JT. The Secrets of Wealth Creation in the Age of Welfare Politics. That's what we have today. Welfare politics.
And you know, it's a good book when it's more expensive than all the other books. So, and there's probably a reason why, because it's limited supply and it's got amazing reviews, reviews.
Yeah. So you see, so these are my my two books, JT. And you know, it's all about wealth creation. You know.
Yeah, you're right. This has been. And by the way, here's a little secret, right? So I'm starting to buy now, get more involved with the buying businesses at P. You know what I did? I picked up every goddamn book there is, right? Everything there is, right? At the same time. And I plan on going through every single one of them right there next to my desk. And I'm keeping in a pile. So I'm constantly reminded, and that, because that's what you said, read everything, be involved, be commitment as well. I recommend everybody check the website, pick up both books. And I'm going to talk to Zayed off here in a few seconds about things, but this was my favorite interview of all time. No doubt about it. I 100% resonated. And the reason why I know it's good, because I'm actually excited to get back to work. And that's what a great interview does. That's what a great person does. He ignites the fire. Now you can run away from the fire, or you can just jump on the fire. And I'm the person who jumps up to the fire. And that's why this will be one for the ages as well. So I want to thank you for being on here, Zayed, as well. Please make sure you pick up, check his website. Make sure you share this interview to everyone you know. That's value. We give out great content. You share. You know, don't just keep things like this to yourself. Because that's how we make the family of disruptors bigger and bigger and bigger.
Family of disruptors. That's the key. Exactly right. Family of disruptors.
So hopefully when I see you, I get a t-shirt. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. And we will see you next time. Unfortunately, maybe I should just retire this, because it's going to be very disappointing going forward when I have to suffer through an interview. And I'm like, ugh, when this was the truth, because we could have done a 5-hour interview and not even scratched the surface as well. So we will do more, and it's only the beginning. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you on the Shake. Like, share, comment. More importantly, implement. It doesn't make a difference if you don't do it. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, JD.